everybody would take their seats.
Sure, that's the money source. Money source.
Is that the same level as the Senate?
Credit card statement or whatever. Everything else is cool.
Yes.
I'm sorry. No. Nothing yet.
We are obviously one member, warm body, breathing, something away from a quorum. We don't have public comment we can take, and I guess we could do the chief executive report. Hang on a second. Hey, everybody, we're going to start as a subcommittee and do a couple reports just to move things along. Charles, thank you. I get your message. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure.
Move things along until we get a third member. So we're going to start with the executive officer's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Or the anomaly of the mayor and me being here before everybody else. We can start with, you know. Okay. Now that I have your full attention, hear your report?
Apparently not. When Michael Turner makes a report on the state legislative issues, we'll comment on developments related to the high-speed rail project and the discussion which may be occurring as regards the reallocation of certain bond money away from the regional connector towards the high-speed rail project. Obviously, that would be an issue of the most serious issue to us that we would need to be forthcoming in our opposition as regards to. The project team for the High Desert Corridor is meeting in Llano on Thursday to present a project update with analyses regarding areas such as Palmdale, Lancaster, Adelanto, and other areas. We've had workshops this week on the Van Nuys Rapidway, meeting recently with the new San Fernando Valley COG. And I should note the last two Saturdays the Crenshaw Leadership Council has met regarding the Crenshaw Light Rail Project. With that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's confusing for you.
All right. Diane, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I was here, but I didn't know you guys were able to make your way across town.
We were trying to occupy something. I'm just not sure what, you know. We just did the executive officer report, which caused the mayor to leave the room for some reason. Why don't we go, Matt, you want to talk about communications officer report?
Sure.
F5. I didn't do it. What's that?
Lower right.
They keep updating. Where?
Put your mouse. Somebody help our communications officer communicate, please.
There we go.
Hey. Yanni went to an engineer for help, no less. Oh, my God.
Okay. Good morning. Sorry about the technical difficulties. This week we launched our evening rail service on the purple, red, and blue lines. What that is 10-minute headways going between 6 p.m. and midnight. We put together over 40 partners. Cirque du Soleil was one of the our first featured partner in our promotion. And we'll basically be coming back to the board with updates on it, but it was pretty exciting. It was a great event to kick it off. And as we get ridership reports, we will bring them back to you, but we launched that service this week. Another area we're going into in terms of technology is quick response codes. And what this does is this is almost an immediate link to either a website or the direct information, and so we're experimenting and putting these on different aspects of our communications that are out there as we move more into the technological age. But this is something we're venturing into. In terms of a successful technology program, we our next trip system is eclipsed the million hit mark in terms of in a month. It's a 22% increase over September, but this is our next trip service. It just keeps growing and growing in terms of popularity and use. In terms of gate locking, we finished our first phase of testing, and again, this... Oh. Yes?
Explain a little bit about next trip. You know, it's a big deal.
All right. Well, what NextTrip is basically an application you can get on your smartphone or through a website. It's something where you can actually identify when the next bus is coming based on your location. I actually use it all the time in terms of if you have a cell phone that has a locator system, you can it'll tell you which buses are coming, and you can identify how many of them that you want. And it counts down the service that's coming. I don't know if you can see the visual up there, but it gives you an entire listing of buses. We implemented this program, I think, over about 6 months ago.
Where the buses are in real time, right?
Yes.
This is like a big deal.
It's a huge deal, and it's incredibly successful. We're also in the process of putting up those actual QR codes on our bus stops as well, too, so that customers can scan that code and actually get directly to the next trip site. So it'll... identify it. So, yeah, it's an amazing technology that's being utilized by more and more customers. Okay?
The mayor is accessing it now.
All right, a live demonstration.
So, these are all the...
This is a 70? So, the 70 downtown is arriving in 6 minutes. This is from El Monte. And then there's another one arriving in...
I'm sorry, we had a question. Someone wanted to know if that's where the 70 is supposed to be arriving.
This is great.
Yeah, this is great. It's a very impressive system, and it works amazing. We're also exploring and expanding it to our rail system, but that involves...
And the app is free?
Yeah, it's the app is free and the website. It's actually not an app. You just download it.
Can I do this presentation for you?
Okay. Yeah.
Say, Matt, tell them what they won. No, tell them where to get the app.
It's great.
Mr. Mayor, on the app?
That's great. It's all great.
Okay. Load it. You two guys good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Anything else on that?
So, Matt, next trip does what?
Next trip tells you when the next trip is coming. And
that's cool.
All right. But, no, it's a great system. Okay. The test locking of gates. We tested four stations over 4 weeks, beginning in September. We did it in the off peak. We submitted a board box on all the results of that, and I'll kind of summarize some of that. But we did Wilshire Normandy, Vermont Beverly, Wilshire Western, Hollywood and Western. And we're in the process of testing stations during the peak. We've done the first three of six. Which is Wilshire, Vermont, Universal City, and we did North Hollywood last night. Those are larger stations, and we're doing them in the peak between 1 and 6 p.m. In terms of what we found so far, and again, these are just preliminary results, but in terms of, and this is stuff we didn't really know before, is the actual fair media usage through our gates. During this test, we actually had 100% fair check on everything. And so basically what we found is, in terms of monthly pass users, that's about 25 to 30% of the customers going through the gates. Seven-day passes accounts for 8%, and our annual passes, which is our business passes as well as the annual passes, accounts for 3%. Single users and the day pass users basically account for almost close to half of our total users. That's been pretty consistent. In terms of external fare media, Metrolink transfers, depending on the station, it ranged between 2% and 10% of the people entering the station. Access services was pretty consistently around 4%. Easy transit pass was around 4%, and interagency transfers were less than 1%. And these numbers were actually pretty consistent from station to station. In terms of from a TAP perspective, some of the observations is about 60% of the fare media is TAP enabled. 20% is external fare media, meaning it's like Metrolink and different non-metro fares. And then 20% is paper fare media that needs to be converted, which is metro fare media, which we're in the process of doing. We also found that about 50% of people with TAP cards won't TAP unless they're encouraged. And that means that if there's a sheriff's presence or if the gates are locked, obviously the TAP usage goes up. In terms of the vending machine, yeah, yes.
Loud enough today? I have mine. Thank you.
Lenny has a wooden extender to make his microphone longer.
Yes.
And folks can draw whatever conclusions from that they want to.
I'm serious. I told you he's got a jury-wig wooden extender to make it longer.
Yes. On the tap. So 60% of the people have purchased the TAP card, but 30%.
It's a USC thing.
30% just don't tap.
Yeah.
That's half of 60%. That's why.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. What we found is about 25% of the people TAP that go through, total 25 to 30%, and there's reasons for 40% of those, which is basically they either don't have TAP-enabled fare media, whether it's issued by us or it's issued by Metrolink or something like that. So even of the people who do have TAP cards, they still don't TAP or unless they're encouraged to TAP.
So we need to change their behavior.
Yes.
And right now we're doing that by having presence and having the gates locked.
Yes.
When there is no presence and the gates are still locked, will they tap?
That's what we're trying to determine right now. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the way they'd have to get in. If the gates are locked, that's how they would have to enter, is by tapping. So.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that I understood something.
Okay.
Because we're actually talking 30% are not tapping.
Right. And in terms of the ticket vending machines, the activity that took place there is what we found is the day pass and single sales or single trip sales were up by 50%. So that's customers that don't have a pass. What they were doing was purchasing a day pass or a single trip. That's about 70% of our total sales. So what we really experienced in terms of ticket vending machines was about a 35% increase in sales while we were locking the gates. And just to put that in perspective, basically ticket vending machines are about 10% of our total system revenue. So, you can do the math accordingly, but basically it does show a revenue increase and we're still doing an analysis in terms of what those real impacts are.
What's that 30% increase translate into in dollars?
So that's $7 million a year, just based on TVM revenue being at about $35 million. So
$7 million a year, which is still less than maintaining it. But anyhow, we digress.
Okay. And some of the observations we had basically were that we could tell that a lot of our customers are using the ticket machines for the first time. It's still too early to draw conclusions because, again, we were just doing this in the off-peak. So that's why we're continuing with our testing. And we're also continuing with our conversion of fare media to be TAP-enabled. So I do have individual station results if you guys want them, but for the sake of time.
Can you update us on the discussions with Metrolink about getting a common fare media or something? Because it's 4,000 to 6,000, if I remember right, passengers that transfer from Metrolink to Metro that that don't have tap access to do this. So I know we're
Right. Yeah, Metrolink actually had a fare symposium where they had different vendors come in. We've been talking about it on a pretty regular basis, trying to come up with conclusions on how to make this work. Obviously, they're a big impact to our rail system, and we need to figure out a solution for them. We're looking at different alternatives in terms of having some type of tap-enabled fare media. That, again, exactly what form that comes in, you know, we're still trying to figure that out. But the biggest issue with any solution is the distribution of the fare media, whether it's modifying their fare box or their ticket machines or figuring out some other distribution method.
So, I mean, one of the cars I saw just had to put an RFID chip, whatever, a little chip inside a card that could be a regular Metrolink card with a tap chip in it. I guess that's one of the things they were looking at, and they were about 18 cents a piece or something.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically a paper smart card. The biggest issue with those is just how they're kind of fragile. But that's, you know, and technology keeps improving all the time.
Is there a goal of how quickly we can try? I mean, because obviously the agency wants to move to implement the gate policy system wide. You know, that's obviously the direction it's going in. So we need to resolve this before that happens. Obviously.
Yes. Yes.
I think on the Metrolink, there's really two issues. One is the monthly pass, which is fairly easy to resolve because they use them for a month. The real issue, I think, that we're struggling with John Fenton is the day tickets on Metrolink, which are not TAP compatible. Matt, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the issue that we're still trying to confront.
And what do Amtrak passengers do?
I don't believe that they are enabled to ride the MTA system with their Amtrak ticket. That might be an issue we should look at, but right now they're not. They don't get to ride.
Right. All right, Matt. Thank you. More?
No.
Any other questions for Matt? If not, Matt, thank you. We have a quorum. We don't have a consent calendar. The one issue I think that requires a vote is item 25. We'll do federal and state. Next. Actually, let's do this. I'm sorry, Michael. Let's go to the Union Station. Let's go to number 25, just so while we have all our folks, and then we will go from there back to 24, 26, and 27. I'm sorry. Say, Matt, before Martha starts. Matt, have we ever – I'm sorry to do this out of order, but on item 25, I'm sorry, yes, on item 25, there are three board members up here who have conflicts, which leaves two of us conflict-free.
That's right.
Not enough to pass anything, but it's sort of nice.
Michael.
We have almost all that power, but without objection from the committee, I'll suggest we just move this to the full board for consideration and deal with it that way. And hopefully there's enough people to vote on it there. But we'll move it up that way. But all right, so that's for 25. Thanks. Great job, Martha. Great job. Cal, glad we brought you over.
Thank you.
And to the point. And a unanimous vote. But anyhow, as I was saying, before we go back then to 24, so Michael Turner, you are up, and Rafi. Matt, when we started with the debit card, basically loading the card, and we're giving out the card to people that didn't have credit cards, I know there's a lot of discussion about it. Have we had a report back on, I don't recall seeing a report on how that's working, how many cards there are, what's happening to the data from those cards, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we could bring a report back. There's actually two programs for that. What you're talking about is our Visa debit card. And I think we have about 1,000 members on that program, and I'll get you more specific data next report. But the bigger program that's out there right now is what we're doing with Access Services, where that's over, I think they've issued over 25,000 cards. And the great part about that program is it lets them use the taxi cabs as well as get onto tap-enabled systems.
But that's still a card they have to load. It doesn't come with credit.
No, it does not come with credit. It's a debit card, and you have to put value on there. And I can find out more information.
No, I'd like to know, and I'm particularly interested in what's happening to the data that's collected by those cards, because I know that was a concern that a lot of us had when it was discussed initially. So,
okay,
if you get back to us on that, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, thanks. We go on federal or state first? Okay, is your mic working on? There we go. Rafi, good to see you. Congratulations on the newest member of your family.
Thank you very much.
2 weeks now?
2 weeks. It's good news. It's good news.
Congratulations.
Good morning, Chairman Katz, members of the committee. A number of issues I want to touch on. I've got prepared remarks. I'm going to depart from them because we've got some fresh information that just occurred over the last 60 minutes, and that is Speaker John Boehner just called a press conference with Chairman John Mica and announced the introduction of H.R. 7. It's the American Energy Infrastructure Jobs Act, and this is, in essence, a five-year authorization bill. And so we've had two big developments over the past week. Last week, Senator Boxer adopted a two-year, $100 billion bill, and now we evidently, from Speaker Boehner, have news that he's moving forward on a five-year bill. What was not included in the press conference was how much is going to be included in the bill, what date the bill is going to be brought before the House T&I Committee, and where specifically the money is going to be drawn from. Conceptually, what the Speaker outlined with Chairman Mica is that leases from exploration in the Arctic, specifically close to the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve up just on the North Shelf of Alaska, is going to be the source of the money that would backfill the Highway Trust Fund, which is not capable of paying down the bill that they're going to put forward. Now, where that sits with members of the House, where that sits with members of the Senate, and how the Obama administration reacts to a proposal to pay for highway funding through drilling in the north of Alaska, I think the next couple of days and months will tell the tale. So that's a new development. The second issue I want to touch on is, and the mayor had made a comment about this with Deputy Administrator Therese McMillan 2 weeks ago, is that we continue to do well on the grants front. We secured a $2 million grant last week. Prior to that, we had gotten the largest livability grant in the nation, the fourth largest state of good repair grant in the nation, and we're doing really well on that, and that's a credit to ARCH leadership and the leadership of the planning department doing really great work. The third item I want to touch on is the appropriations front. As dysfunctional as Washington is, they have agreed to move forward on a transportation funding bill for fiscal year 2012. It includes about $2 billion less for federal highways. It includes about $8.3 billion for transit, $1.9 billion for New Starts funding. And something that the Republicans very much wanted to eliminate at the onset of the 112th Congress. There's no funds in this conference agreement for high-speed rail. The fourth item I wanted to touch on is is that we continue to work with Senator Wyden's staff on the TRIPS bill, and this is all part of our effort to get our bonding piece of America Fast Forward going. So at this point, America Fast Forward, look at it from a bird's eye perspective. We've got TIFIA ensconced both in the House and Senate bills. We've got our New Starts proposals, which are ready to be embedded in the President's fiscal year 2013 budget. And the last piece, and an important piece, is the bonding. And we're not where we want to be right now, but it is a work in progress, and we're hopeful that Senator Wyden, Senator Hoeven, and other members of the House and Senate get on board what we're trying to do. And that concludes my remarks. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Rob, one thing I was going to mention, not only did, I mean, this is something that I think, starting with the mayor and the MTA board and everybody else, and all the hard work that went in, both Mica and Boxer moved TIFIA from a buck and a quarter basically to $1 billion, and on a 10-to-1 match, that's huge. But equally important for our perspective, I think, is they took all of our reforms in terms of TIFIA as well, in terms of locking in credit early and a variety of the other things. So not only was the MTA successful in, you know, in taking what the mayor had articulated earlier and getting that in the numbers, but also the other parts of it. So we're hopeful, as you said, the bond piece we still need to do, but between the letters we're getting these days from the feds and the movement in the two bills, it's hard to say you're optimistic having anything to do with anything they're doing back there. But we've come a long way. Let's put it that way. We've made a lot of progress. It's just, it's unusual in that it's not one bill. But the other part is, I think you mentioned, Senator Boxer does name a section of the new bill, of the new title, a new section, America Fast Forward, in the new MAP 21 Transportation Act. So that's a significant change in federal policy towards transportation that will be part of the law for the foreseeable future. So we keep our fingers crossed. Mr. Mayor?
Yes, and I had a conversation with her, with the senator, just after the vote. We put out a letter to all of the mayors who got behind America Fast Forward, and all of them are generating letters, calls to Senate Finance, where funding for the bill has to be identified. And Senator Baucus has made it absolutely clear that it's a priority for him to do that. Just a few minutes ago, as I understand it, Micah and Boehner also had a press event, talked about the surface transportation bill as a 5-year bill instead of a 6-year bill. And as you know, in the House version, America Fast Forward, it's not called America Fast Forward, but you know, the $1 billion for TIFIA and the reforms. Right. What's important, as you all know, is not just that we expanding TIFIA, but as an example, you can access up to 49% for a project from 33. You the number of the 5 reforms that we put together.
You can bundle the projects together.
Yeah. So this is moving in the right direction, bipartisan support, just got to keep on plowing ahead.
I think our part of our strategy all along has been to be the last folks standing, and we still are. So it may just play out. But
I'm hopeful that the next big part of this is going to be the New Starts puzzle, and probably within the next 3 months, between the Department of Transportation, the Office of Management and Budget, which is part of the Executive Office of the President, they're going to favorably review our full funding grant agreements for our projects, and we'll have more good news to report.
And yeah, I think it's clear now. I mean, the other thing that came out of the press conference that the mayor mentioned, and you mentioned, Ruffy, is, as you said, Boehner has now drawn sort of the line in the sand. He does it all the time. The president keeps moving him. But did I say that out loud? The trade-off for new funding for transportation is ANWR. It's dealing, I mean, what the Republican conference wants is drilling, expanded drilling offshore, drilling in ANWR, and there was a third piece to it. So that'll be
oil shale production.
Shale production, thank you. So we'll see. But thank you, Rafi.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Today I'd like to update you on the condition of the state budget, the status of our bond-funded projects, and
Michael, there's actually good news in that they've hurt us so bad in the past they can't hurt us anymore, just about.
Yeah. You're taking bone at this point.
Yeah,
the meat is gone, the arteries are gone, it's down to bones. And then I also want to touch on high-speed rail. Yesterday, the Legislative Analyst's Office issued their annual fiscal outlook report. That report had 2 key findings affecting the state budget. The first is that the current year budget will not receive the $4 billion in anticipated revenue that's needed to keep that budget balanced. This year's budget was balanced on the anticipation of that revenue, and if that revenue is not received, then the state has to make a series of automatic cuts, and they have to wait for a report from the Department of Finance next month before making that decision. The second major finding of the report is that next year's budget deficit is estimated at $13 billion. The next step in the process, as I mentioned, will be the revenue estimates issued by the Department of Finance next month, and then the issuance of the governor's budget proposal on January 10th of next year. The major challenge for us, as always, is to try and keep the transportation funding programs intact. The reworking of the transportation funding through the sales tax, gas tax swap stabilized some of the base of our transportation system. That measure also retained the sales tax on diesel, which is allocated for transit operations purposes. However, one of our major challenges has been to maintain the momentum on bond sales for transportation projects. On that note, I'm pleased to report that the California Transportation Commission recently allocated over $700 million in bond proceeds to transportation projects. Los Angeles County received over $400 million, with the majority of that funding going to one of our key projects, Alameda Corridor East. We now turn our focus to next year's bond sales, and we'll be working with our regional partners to support project funding needs in the county. And I should thank our commissioners for their support, Commissioner Dario Frommer, the chairman of the commission, Fran Inman, as well as former supervisor Yvonne Burke and former board member Yvonne Burke, have all been very helpful in ensuring that project funding. I should also address the recent news articles relating to readiness of projects and the existence of cash balances at the state due to that. During the summer budget session, Caltrans was identified to have up to $2 billion in cash on hand from previous bond sales. Assertions have been made about the ability of local agencies to bring their projects to a readiness stage. Metros began a process this summer of working with Caltrans to ensure that they were receiving the most up-to-date project data so that they can size future bond sales. That effort has helped to ensure that Caltrans and our project sponsors are coordinating and communicating effectively about the status of the projects. I'd also note that the recent CTC allocation of $700 million is in addition to another recent Caltrans action allocating $200 million in transit bond funding, and that works through much of the cash on hand. Of course, the major issue facing the legislature next year will be the high-speed rail project. The High-Speed Rail Authority recently released its draft business plan, and the plan is currently undergoing a 60-day public review period. The High-Speed Rail business plan represents a significant evolution in the detail, and some would say the reality of what it will take to complete high-speed rail in California. The plan also lays out a blended approach which incorporates the project into existing rail system and also lays out a longer-term strategy for its completion. There are two key elements that demonstrate an evolution in authority. These are two key elements, that demonstrate an evolution in the authority's planning. The legislature, though, will ultimately have to make a decision about the project next year, as the plan requests the issuance of $2.5 billion in Proposition 1A funds to start the initial segment in the Central Valley. The Senate and Assembly Transportation Committees have announced they will hold a hearing on the business plan on December 5th, and there will be additional hearings in the future. Clearly, there are a number of issues with this project. As with any major infrastructure project, there are challenges and opportunities. The challenges are clear, but we should also not lose sight of the opportunities. Our agency has worked to support high-speed rail coming to Los Angeles, and this can be an important project that provides significant benefits to our region. However, the business plan highlights a number of challenges, and I'd like to highlight two of those challenges. First is that the plan lays out a blended strategy to achieve a high-speed rail project from the L.A. Basin to the San Francisco Bay Area. This strategy is only completed after the construction of the Central Valley segment. However, funding is not guaranteed to anything beyond the Central Valley. We do not know when the project will reach Los Angeles and how it will be funded. Those will be key issues to address in the future. This brings me to the second major area of concern, funding mainly for other projects. Given California's debt problem, it is inevitable that a project this large will compete for funds in the state. The project has the potential to compete for limited bond capacity, and that could impact other projects in our region. One of our most significant concerns with respect to the project funding actually impacts the regional connector. The high-speed rail bond includes $950 million in funding that is to be allocated to rail operators to complete rail connectivity, to create rail connectivity to the high-speed rail system. Metro is due to receive over $100 million from this formula, and we have allocated that money to the regional connector. That source of funds provides a local match for one of our key federal projects. The High Speed Rail Authority, however, has asserted that these funds should be used for, to pay for the main high speed rail project and has opposed allocation of these funds in the past budgets. The authority is now continuing to work to reallocate those funds. We're coordinating with all of our partners throughout the state that would receive these funds to support their allocation, and will continue to advocate for the allocation of these funds according to the requirements of Proposition 1A. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Michael, thank you very much. There's also, along that same line, on, I think it's, is it the 1A? That's got, I think it's the same 950. There's PTC money in there also for Metrolink and for safety in this corridor. And I think, you know, I know I've had a, some conversations with some high-speed rail authority board members. I don't think a whole lot of folks in Southern California in particular are going to look kindly on taking PTC money for a grade step in Chowchilla. So, that, I mean, that's an important issue, and I think one that, you know, that both our boards need to look at and our member agencies. Just, you know, I appreciate the enthusiasm the governor has shown for high speed, and, you know, he's put some people on the board who are fascinated with, you know, the new shiny thing, but they're working, and they're working hard to try and make it different. It's the first time I've seen in a long time somebody get positive comments when they announce that the cost has risen from, you know, 40 to or 50 to 100, but they got good points for honesty. So so that's good. But the other thing we have to watch out for from our standpoint, I think, you know, the original plan, when I was on the authority, it was a 50-50 public-private deal, $20 billion public, $20 billion private. Now it's a $100 billion deal, and they're still talking about $20 billion from the private. So that must mean that public share went up to 80. And I don't know where there's $80 billion in California for that, and I think what we could do with $80 billion, if we had it in public transit and mass transit and our programs and our, you know, our colleagues and other agencies, so there could be, you know, that could not be a pleasant experience to get into an issue like that with them, but we need to get that PTC done, and we need to make it safe down here, so.
And I, that highlights the key issue with the regional connector, because one way they try and approach that $80 billion is to take a big chunk of the $950 that goes for connectivity projects, particularly the regional connector, and allocate it towards the high-speed rail project.
Slade?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say that as John Fenton and I have discussed the issue of PTC as regards the trade association APTA, I've assured him that we will take the strongest of positions as regards APTA to ensure that any attempt to back off PTC will be opposed by us and by the industry in Washington.
They're trying to thread a very thin needle. So, but, you know, listen, I wish them luck, and, you know, I look forward to someday riding that train to that really good Chinese restaurant in Hanford. So, so far it's not going anywhere else. Anyhow, any other comments on high-speed legislation or Sacramento? And, Michael, I assume you're saying triggers are going to go off in the first round of triggers will go off at Sacramento?
That's the assumption at this point. I mean, they still have to wait for the Department of Finance report. It will probably be sometime in January when they do it.
But they're tracking about 1.5 short right now, 1.5 billion under.
Right now, but the LAO is estimating that they'll only get 3.7 of the 4 when all is said and done.
But 3.7, though, gets them...
I mean, no, excuse me, they will not get, excuse me, they will not get the 3.7.
Oh, we'll not get the 3.7.
We'll not get 3.7 of the 4.
Right, there are different triggers depending on whether it's a billion off or 2 billion
right.
off. Right.
Right.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Next, Foster Youth Transit Pilot Program. Mr. Antonovich, I believe, brought this program up originally. Staff report, Matt?
Yes.
Update?
Where?
Bottom right. All right. Somebody help the communications guy again. Come on, people.
There we
come on,
go.
There's your engineer. Right. Come on, Sepulveda.
I just wanted to see him move. But yeah, good morning. This is an update on where we are with the Foster Youth Self-Sufficiency Program. We've actually had two meetings with the county and their various representatives. Just to remind the committee, this is a one-year pilot project that was approved by the board. In working with the county, we've decided we want to begin the program in July of 2012 to coincide with our fiscal year. The program includes 18 to 21-year-old foster children that are reacclimating, beginning either in education or in employment.
We estimate there's about 2,000 participants. The way we're looking at this program right now, and we're still in the process of finalizing the details and figuring out how to specifically implement it, but basically the registration would go through the county, so it would be through the existing county programs. Metro would provide photo ID tap cards. This is a modification of the program, and the benefit of this is that, one, we can give them out on a one-time basis, so in other words, they're an annual pass, and we can monitor the usage, which provides us, one, better analysis of the utilization of the program, as well as it allows us to identify the financial impacts. In terms of the projected cost of the program or the revenue impacts, currently is about between $300,000 and $500,000 a year. We don't anticipate that changing, but we do. The fact that we are going to use the TAP program to track that, we will know specific usage and specific related costs of the program and be able to report back at its conclusion. We're looking forward to implementing this program. So far, we've had great response in terms of working with the county and the different participants, and we will report back to the board as we progress, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
This is a very valuable program because our emancipated youth really enter the world without any support system, and this will allow them the opportunity of transportation to go to school for their employment and to have a sense of independence, helping them to mature into responsible adults. So this is a long time in coming, and it's one of the we were able to get President Bush, when he was president, to sign legislation to allow continuing support for the emancipated youth between 18 and 21. That required state legislation across the nation. California enacted that first law last year, and doing that for these this population. Otherwise, they're without a life savior, and they're left to the elements, which are not the most thereby ending up in our county jails or in our county morgue.
Michael, thank you.
I applaud the program. It's a fantastic fantastic program. My question is, I understand our desire to increase use of the TAP card. I also know that there are some systems in the region that buses that have not don't accept the TAP card. So we're not going to get the information we think we want unless we go to something like the Easy Pass.
Well, actually, it's two things. One is, with the Easy Pass, we won't get the utilization data at all because it's a flash pass. But in talking to the county, if there are special cases where they do want to use systems that aren't included on the TAP card, we would provide them Easy Passes. So that's basically the fallback to if a student's coming out of Santa Monica or something like that and they're not on the TAP program. So we'd make accommodations for that.
I was thinking specifically of Long Beach, which is a pretty large transit system, and know that they don't use the TAP card at this time, and I don't want to see us not let foster kids use the program because we don't have the right kind of media. So they will be able to use the Easy Pass then until the TAP program gets
back on the
system.
Right. We would leave that up to the county personnel. So if an individual case would require a TAP card or an Easy Pass, we would issue that out.
Are the passes issued at the, for instance, the university or at the high schools? Where are they issued?
They would be issued through, again, and we're still working out the details, but they'd be issued through the county departments where they're currently.
The county departments.
Where they're currently interacting with the different foster youth.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Matt, that's a report and file? Receive and file?
Yeah, receive and file.
Thank you very much. And last on here, item 27, revenue generated advertising.
Yes.
More.
Revenue generated advertising.
Good morning. I'm Warren Morse from Communications.
We need you to tell us how you're going to take all those advertisers, hold them by their ankles, and shake every dime out of them you can for Metrolink, for Metro.
Well, we'll certainly try to do that. We do generate.
Just try. You got to do that. We're not going to make it any other way.
We do generate a substantial amount of revenue from our advertising contracts, and those are done with outside vendors. We currently have two contracts. One is for advertising on our bus system. It's a five-year contract, and by the time it's over, it will have generated over $118 million in revenue. Our rail advertising contract, also a five-year contract, is generating $11.6 million in revenue for us. And in FY12, these two contracts together will bring in $27.7 million. Dollars.
One question: the 118 and the 11 are five-year figures?
Yes, that's the five-year figure for each one.
Basically, $130 million over the 5 years, or
correct?
So
that's correct. It escalates during the 5 years, or has this in the current contract. But these contracts are coming to an end at the end of next year, and so now we are preparing new solicitations to have contracts to continue the revenue after that.
Who are the vendors now?
The current vendor on both contracts is CBS Outdoor.
And what's your evaluation of either in terms of CBS? Are we getting as much as we ought to be on this? I mean, on one hand, $27 million a year sounds like a lot of money. It doesn't seem like a lot in the context of this is Los Angeles. There's 8 million people coming through here between the city and the county. That's a lot of looks. You guys know this better than we do, so
right.
Should we do a lot better, a little better? Or are we just lucky to have what we have?
I think we have done very well on the current contract. When we bid the contracts, we asked the proposers to propose two ways. We asked them to give us proposals based on a fixed guaranteed revenue amount and on a revenue share amount. And in analyzing those proposals, we decided to recommend the fixed revenue, and that proved to be beneficial to us because had we been on a revenue share over the past 5 years, we would have had realized a substantially less amount of revenue. So to answer your question, I think that we're doing pretty well. We're certainly among our revenues from advertising are among the highest in the nation.
So was I.
From transit agencies.
So what are the suggestions in terms of upping that? Is it still make sense to keep, you know, one vendor like CBS? How do we get more competition? Do we have to change our restrictions or what we're doing to get more revenue out of this? And we're not going, I don't think we can legally, the whole liquor route and cigarette route anyhow. But aside from that, what do we do to make this a more lucrative business opportunity?
Well, what we're doing is trying to give a number of options in the proposal so that any potential bidders can propose various new ways to generate revenue. The bus advertising solicitation breaks out four categories of advertising, and we break it out so that we can see how much revenue we generate from each one of those. It also includes a category that we call innovative approaches, which allows the vendors to give us any idea that they want in terms of something that would generate additional revenue. As I mentioned, this asks for the fixed revenue and the revenue share proposals.
You've surveyed other systems, other properties to see what they do. Are there people doing other more? Are there different things being done that we're not doing here in other areas?
Not really. Actually, we've added a few things over the past couple of years. There are ads now on the ceilings of buses and the ceilings of rail cars, which are called the Michelangelos. We've also added some ads called headliners, which are on the tops of buses above the windows. And then we've added two sheet posters in our rail stations as well. The way to increase the revenue basically is to provide more inventory, more space for posting advertising.
And okay, so well, that's what I was getting to, I think, earlier. So what limits that we currently have in place would you change to get more dollars out of it? I assume the RFP is going to reflect the current restrictions.
That's correct.
We can have that discussion before the RFP goes out.
Right? Correct. The only real restriction that we have on buses is that for wrapped advertising, there is a limit of 200 vehicles in the fleet that can be wrapped at any given time.
And why is that part of the ATU contract?
It is a longstanding provision in the ATU contract.
The ATU contract limits how many buses we can wrap for advertising.
Yeah, I'll get to that. Yeah.
Does anybody know why? It seems like a very strange thing to bargain for.
I can't see through the windows. Safety. Can I see as well through the windows?
If Mr. Walsh's comment, which I'm happy to take a public comment, John, if you want to come down, but I'll ask the question. I mean, but in terms of the safety, it's either safe with one or it's not safe with one. Whether it's 50 or 75 shouldn't matter in that sense. It's either safe or it's not safe.
That is correct. And we also have we have restrictions on the amount of window space that can be covered on a vehicle. So we do not allow full wraps that cover all the windows on all sides.
And we do that for safety reasons?
That's correct.
That's our policy. That's not the ATU contract. The ATU just takes it and limits it to 200 vehicles.
That's correct.
Yeah. Out of how many vehicles potentially?
2,200 in the fleet, about.
Get out of the contract. I think as we're renegotiating contracts, I think I'd encourage the CEO and staff to take a look at that. I mean, it's a restriction on dollars we can earn. I mean, 200 out of 2,200 means, you know, we're doing 10%. So I guess the answer to the question I asked earlier was, yeah, you want to increase this money significantly, get rid of the ATU contract language that restricts us to 10% of our fleet.
That could have an effect on it. There is some question as to whether there would be enough demand to put wraps on the entire fleet.
Sure. But let me, we don't know.
Right.
I mean, obviously, demand's going to be, you know, it'll be driven by what people want to pay for it.
Right.
Okay. All right.
We'll follow up.
Oh, yeah. On the something else in terms of increasing revenue with the rail solicitation. The rail solicitation will include an invitation to develop proposals for station naming rights, actually naming rights for stations and for individual lines. And this is something that we're doing for the first time. And so we're asking the vendors to propose an arrangement to us as to how they might represent us for to try and sell station naming rights, whether they would get a percentage of revenue that's actually brought in, or whether they would just get a retainer for representing us and selling naming rights. And but that would hopefully be additional revenue as well.
So that's naming rights on stations, on any buildings. What do you mean?
This is covering.
Do we need to send Petsouris a bill for the name on the plaza?
I may be too late for that, but this would be for stations, our rail stations, and for individual lines. We had an analysis done within the last year about the potential value for naming stations and naming lines, and there are some valuations developed on that, and so now we want to see if it's possible to actually sell those.
I'm just concerned that the RFP not be too restrictive. That we see what's out there and let people be creative. Advertising comes back before other things in a recession because it's what drives purchases. So I'd like to see us take advantage of it to the extent possible. If there are safety issues, we need to make sure that they're resolved in favor of safety, obviously. But I'd really like to see some creativity out of it. I mean, I sort of had to pull out of you this whole – I mean, I asked you the question at the beginning, and we wound up pulling out of you that one big thing would be the 20% on the cars. Are there other things like that that we ought to be looking at? And maybe, Matt, you guys take another look at that, and before the RFP goes out, at least talk to the board about if we need to make some changes on that.
We will certainly look at it. I don't think that we have any other serious restrictions on the ads. In fact, we have actually tried to make it less restrictive. So I don't think there's any one thing that we could do that would benefit that.
Yeah,
And actually, if I could add, we've been very aggressive on every front. You know, and one of the things we also have too is All Vision, which is another contract we have where they're managing our exterior billboards. And working on ways to increase our revenue there. As Warren mentioned, in this contract, we leave it open to any kind of revenue opportunity that they can come up with. We give a lot of flexibility. And the way the contract structure, the RFP structured, is set up so that it may go to multiple vendors. It hasn't been the way it's been in the past just because of the way the bids came in. But in the past, we've tried things like in the tunnel advertising. We've looked at putting ads in our parking lots. We pretty much don't leave any stone unturned. It's just the biggest risk in this whole thing is basically our economy. And like you said, advertising does come back quicker. So we're still anticipating an increase in revenue on this contract. But again, we pretty much don't leave any stone unturned when it comes to mm-hmm. generating revenue.
No, and of course, it's fungible money. That's the time we need the most. So, sure. Questions from the committee? Anybody? Mr. Walsh?
The other cards.
How many, HollywoodHighlands.org, how many of you up here have been in a wrapped bus more than once in your life? Okay. You've got two sides, okay? You've got the street side and you've got the traffic side. It's covered with tiny little holes that allow a certain amount of light in. It's radically diminished visibility. You are trading our blood. So the union say, okay, we'll let you have 200. I'll go out here and you ask the first 1,000 operators whether it's a hazard. Ask the first 1,000. And if you think it's bad in the daytime, there is zero visibility at night. And take a look at your accidents. Your accidents are almost always, or at least the serious accidents, cars in other lanes, near misses or hitting one another head on. They're coming from the other lanes. You don't give a damn because it's just black and Hispanic people who take it, you racist swine.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question of the staff. On the advertising, are you proposing any advertising on the tunnels themselves in the station, on the tunnel wall?
Inside the tunnel? Not in this solicitation. We have actually we're working with a company now. There was an installation done a couple years ago that put an animated what's called an animated display inside one of the tunnels. That company went out of business after having done this one installation, and there is now another company that has the exclusive rights to the software that controls this kind of display. So we're working with them to see if we can establish an agreement with them to rejuvenate and refurbish that installation that we already have. And get that going to generate revenue and then potentially add some additional ones inside mutually agreeable locations in the tunnel.
I'm told that in San Francisco they do this. Is that your understanding?
San Francisco, I believe, had the same vendor that went out of business. So I'm going to guess that they're not operating anymore.
Thank you.
Now, stations or tunnel? Underground.
That's inside the tunnel.
What about the stations underground?
He's got a proposal here.
Yeah, this RFP covers advertising inside the stations. Right. That's right.
Anyone else? All right. We will receive and file the report. Look forward to any modifications we need to make before the RFP goes out so we can maximize at least the options and then make decisions on what we want to do and not do. So I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, I have one public comment, Mr. Walsh, and no executive committee executive session after this. So that will conclude this committee after Mr. Walsh.
Have any of you seen the animated display in the tunnel? No. God knows you don't even ride that. I'm telling you right now, get lost. Zeb, get lost. See, he does everything I tell him. First of all, let me tell you something. Since they invented tunnels in the late 19th century, no one looks out the damn window in a subway. Nobody looks out the damn window in the subway. It's traveling so fast, it zips by in about a second. I can imagine why the company that invested their money in animated displays and tunnels went out of business. And I can understand. And I just want to say I'm very happy about the latest mayor's poll that shows Mr. Yaroslavsky at 8% after being an elected official in this city for 36 years. 8%. Undecided 60%, and that's why he's a racist. And a disgrace to my race.
All right, everyone. Discretion being actually winning out for a change. I want to thank everyone for being here and thank everyone for their participation, and this committee is now adjourned.